entire rest of the show and for a while longer if you'll have me. From the 816, I got to admit, you guys are pretty nails this week. Not 100%, but damn good.
Not far away, but like, admit to yourself, right? Like, does anybody sit down and go, man, this is as exciting as the Chiefs, right? I know I'm a weird breed, but damn, the Chiefs get me excited. They're so much fun to watch. The anxiety, the adrenaline, the back and forth, the games are outstanding. Like, is everybody like that, or is that just me? Be honest with yourselves. Like, am I the only one who sees the Chiefs in a better light than everybody else in the NFL? Because they really are, in my opinion. They're better than everybody else, man.
I think for the Chiefs in general is that, and from what I've heard this year from podcasts I listen to and the cut from the Niners media that we played earlier, we'll play it again, is the fact that it's like, they're really 5-0. Like, that's the thing. It's like, you're not surprised they're 5-0. You're surprised at how they're 5-0, if that makes sense.
Okay, so let's talk about that, though, because I don't know if I'm surprised. Like, if you're surprised they're 5-0 because they haven't put up 30 yet, that's on you, I think, at this point in time, right?
Like, I don't think that's the case. I think they're surprised because it's like, okay, Chiefs lose their wide receiver in preseason. Then they lose their other wide receiver in a game in which, you know, where he was number two in stats when it comes to wide receivers.
Was on the cusp of being the best wide receiver in the NFL.
The week before that, they lose their star running back, Isaiah Pacheco. And they have so many questions at left tackle. And also, Juwan Taylor still is kind of a mess with offsides or false starts and all that sort of thing. And then you look at it and you're like, they also lost L'Jarius Sneed. They also lost Willie Gay. They had to cut places where they didn't really want to, but they had to do things otherwise. Yet they're 5-0.
They're 5-0.
And their quarterback's not lead. Like, you'd think, and then I think this is the other thing too, is that you'd think, oh, the Chiefs are 5-0. Okay, so what's that mean? Kelce has what, 500 yards? Mahomes is the number one quarterback clearly in football with passing yards and touchdown. And none of that is there either.
Right.
Yet you look at the stats, you look at it, and you're like, oh, Minnesota's 5-0. Why are they 5-0? Sam Darnold's playing out of his mind, and Kevin O'Connell is a really good offensive-minded coach. Plus, they have Justin Jefferson, who's been healthy this entire year. They've got a good mix of guys on that team. And then you look at the Chiefs. You're like, they don't have Rashee Rice? Uh-uh. They don't have Hollywood Brown? Hadn't played a snap in a regular season? Won't all year? Nope. Isaiah Pacheco's out? Yep. They have a question mark at left tackle? Yep. Mahomes is what? Top 10 in stats? Yeah. Not top 5? Nope. And they're 5-0? What the hell?
Well, I'd see, and you just did there what every, you know, just outside of the area NFL fan does, and really what every NFL fan does in general. You judge the success of a team based on what the offense is going to provide you. And I think you forget about, and I'm not saying you, I'm saying we, the collective you, forget about, you know, there's a defensive side to the football, and what the Chiefs are doing on the defensive side of the football right now is pretty much second to none. I'm looking at the scores over my shoulder, 20, 25, 17, 10, 13. Those are the amount of points the Chiefs have given up. They haven't given up more than 25 points, and they've only given up 20 points twice this season in 5 games. And so you went through all of these offensive positions, right? And I think that's the way everybody looks at a team in the NFL. They go, oh my God, all these injuries. Yeah, but look what they're doing on defense. Look at what Chris Jones is doing this year. Has anybody bothered to see what Chris Jones is doing this year? Like, unbelievable. You're starting to hear the comparisons. Like, last night, there's a guy, what is it, Hill on the Bengals, I think his name is, or Hall, Hill or Hall. Yep, used Hill. To be a Giant. And is playing great defensive tackle for Cincinnati. And Chris Collinsworth at one point goes, this is kind of like a Chris Jones light, you know?
And double teaming and you bat the pass down.
And you bat the pass down. Like, now you're starting to get the comparisons in other games, not just to the guys on offense, but to the guys on defense as well. So the Chiefs have an advantage because they're really good on defense. They don't allow the opponent to score. They go out there and they get, you know, big plays when they need to get big plays. Their big playmakers are making big plays. The defensive line has been phenomenal. I think Bolton's been really solid this year. Trent McDuffie.
Out of the first two games.
Yeah, but you know what? I think still battling back a little bit. Like, I think it's all evened out for Nick Bolton right now.
Fair.
Trent McDuffie's been playing great football right now. I think Justin Reed he's been playing fantastic football, and you've got such an advantage on the sidelines in Andy Reid and Steve Spagnuolo. Find me another coaching staff that aces are up the sleeve, are their offensive and defensive minds that are sitting there over on the sidelines. So when something does go haywire and somebody does get hurt or something does get out of control, they don't lose it. Like, Steve Spagnuolo has become the greatest tease in the NFL. All right. You guys go down and score on your first drive. You ain't getting across the 50 anymore today. Like, they allow that team to go down the field, score, and keep the game close early. And then at the end, they figure it out, and they come through. And so that's how I think the collective us, we judge NFL teams is based on what they're doing on offense, and we forget about that defensive side of the football, which is why, in my opinion, the Chiefs are the best team in the NFL, is because they have figured out the defensive side of the football. They figured it out last year, and this year has now been an extension of last year. They're playing great defense, and they're playing good enough offense with the injuries that they have to win a lot of football games. It's a lot of fun watching these guys play right now.
The one thing you can always look at when you look at why teams have a record they do is always look at point differential.
Oh, right? Chiefs are third best in the AFC in point differential.
They are. The only reason they are is because I guess the Chargers don't play anybody, and the Chiefs only put up 17 against them, but the Chargers have given up 66 points. The Chiefs have the second fewest at 85.
Yeah.
They're tied with the Ravens in that category.
Yeah, so you look at point differential. I think I looked at it yesterday. They were plus 38, and there were some other teams that had a better point differential than them, but some of them had played another game already. You know, the Chiefs are now a game behind everybody else.
Right, and the Ravens gave it up 85 with actually playing another extra week. Yeah, the Chiefs are plus 33.
Plus 33, my bad. I thought it was, yeah. But either way, I mean, they're still third best going into last night's game against the Bengals. Mm-hmm. Giants was the third best in the AFC. I'm like, I was kind of surprised by that. I'm like, damn, they are pretty good, right?
If I would have told you before the season, hey, Rice is going to get hurt, Hollywood Brown's going to be out, there's going to be major problems at left tackle, Travis Kelce's going to have this worst start to his season, his career, and Patrick Mahomes is going to lead the league in interceptions after 5 weeks. What would you guys have, and I said, hey, we're 5-0, would you have been surprised at all?
Yes. No. Yeah. I would 100%. I thought you were going to say, would you be surprised if they were like 3-2?
I would be surprised by that. Bob?
No.
Okay. All right.
I would ask you, what is the defense doing? Like, I'm not surprised because of how good Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and Steve Spagnuolo are. I would be more surprised right now if the Chiefs were three. That was kind of my point.
He hasn't been great.
He hasn't been great, but your defense has been phenomenal. Your defense has been outstanding.
Yeah.
And it's okay to start to kind of lead by this, right? You can lead by having your defense lead the way. Like, that's okay. And I think that's good. I think that's great that the defense is leading the way right now for this football team. It's a lot of fun. I'm a defensive football guy. I love watching this defense go out there because I think it's hard to shut down offenses in the NFL today. And the Chiefs are doing a pretty damn good job. I mean, their last three games, 17, 10, and 13 points. Come on now. That's amazing.
It's just fun that when the Chiefs have a bye, they actually seem like they still play. Because everybody that played today, or that played last week,
yeah,
was basically playing to kind of maintain with Kansas City. Even though the Chiefs didn't play, they're 5-0. Ravens 4-2. They know they have a big tiebreaker loss.
I mean, they're three games back of the Chiefs.
It is what it is. Tonight, the Bills have to play the Jets. They're not only playing to keep that division in their hands, because they do lose tonight in the Meadowlands to the Jets, they'll both be 3-3. Jets would have tiebreaker, but then that puts the Bills that much further away from the Kansas City Chiefs.
So the Bills are 3-2, you said, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So three losses already for the Bills if they end up, because I think the Bills are, like, I do feel there's a coach bounce tonight for the Jets. If they fall to 3-3 and the Ravens are 4-2 and Cincinnati's under 500 and the Browns, like, I mean, my God, everybody's fallen by the wayside right now. And then if the Chiefs win this weekend, now they're 6-0, and the Bills are 3-3.
And the Niners have already ruled out Christian McCaffrey. Their backup running back, Mason, has an AC joint in his shoulder. He went back in for one play, then got hurt again. They're questioning Shanahan's call on that. Brock Purdy's a little banged up.
Yeah.
Deebo Samuel looks to be back to being healthy.
But just when you start thinking you know what's going to happen, right? Like, you know what happens. San Francisco goes out there and puts a 40 on your ass. But I don't think that's going to be the case.
Not against this defense.
But, I mean, if you win this weekend and you're 6-0 and Buffalo's 3-3 and the Ravens are 4-2 or maybe 4-3, who knows what they got this weekend, right? Like, you want to talk about putting distance between you and the damn competition, man. This thing is over.
Lock it up.
Yeah.
Over under 1.5 rest games for the Kansas City Chiefs by the end of the season.
It's just going to be one.
Is 16-17 just going to be, they're just out? They just rest the starters? It's like, what if you lock up the one seed by week 16, like by week 15?
You could essentially do that. You absolutely
have to. Because if you beat Houston and you beat Buffalo, the one seed is over.
The one seed is done.
It's over.
Yeah, because then what are you left with? Pittsburgh and then some.
And that's like by week 13 that would happen, I would think. I think you play Buffalo, then you play Houston in the schedule. Not back-to-back, but in the schedule.
Houston is the Saturday before the Christmas game against Pittsburgh.
Like December 16th, 21st.
December 21st. You could essentially wrap this thing up by December 21st. Now, we're way ahead of ourselves.
I know.
But there's that rest versus health versus
rest or rust.
You know that. So I because you're going to have the bye too, mm-hmm. right? So you got the last 2 weeks of the regular season. You can take a month off. I mean, you essentially could take a month off at the end of the season if you wanted to, but then you have the rust, and then, you know, who knows? I don't know how it all factors in, man.
The stat that comes up this week and later on this show will be Andy Reid's record after a bye. Imagine if he had 4 weeks off before his first playoff opponent. Just saying.
I think Andy Reid would be great. I'm talking about the players and that routine, and Andy Reid would dominate, man.
No doubt.
Also, AFC, so you guys mentioned 3-3 if the Jets win tonight, both the Bills and the Jets. I know. The Dolphins sitting there had a bye this week. We don't know when Tua's coming back. They're sitting there at 2-3.
And then Derek Carr is going to be their quarterback. And then Derek Carr's going to be,
exactly.
Never know.
I do like that. I do like that a lot. Especially after Rattler's performance yesterday.
He was good. He was fun. He's good, man.
After Bob tells you about delicious wings and chili at Smokehouse, we have to wrap a bow on the Royals season. That is Josh Ferner, who will join us one final time to give us the ending and what we should look forward to in the future for this Kansas City Royals team. Dusty Likens, Mac Morey, Bob Fesco here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Rolling right along as we move into the middle of the 8 o'clock hour here on 96.5 The Fan. Damn glad to have you on a Monday morning. Victoryless Monday, but it doesn't matter. You still win when other teams win and lose in the NFL when you have a bye.
It's better than a loser Monday, right? Like coming in here going, oh, we lost a game.
I don't know. I always kind of try to find like hope and losses on the airways.
You can.
You know, people will come to you like, what went wrong? What do we do?
Right.
Nothing. Yeah. Just wait till January.
That's right. Like, I'm glad you're on board with that because so many people are like, I can't believe you don't think the regular season matters. I'm like, no, what matters is what you do in the playoffs when you're the Chiefs. And now, quite frankly, hopefully, I say with a hesitation a little bit, the only thing that's going to matter with the Royals moving forward now is what happens in October. Doesn't matter what you do in the regular season. How did you get to the postseason? What did you do in the playoffs?
From the 816, what is the Instagram for that school? That Instagram is Crestridge Cougar. Go like the video. Somebody told me this morning they had 19.8 thousand likes. Now they have over 21,000. So we're going to try to do our part.
There you go. Keep liking it and subscribe or whatever.
Share
you
it.
Do,
tell
right?
somebody yeah. about it. Like when you're at the water cooler at work and someone's pissed because they're a Dallas Cowboys fan talking to you, Mike. Tell your buddies, be like, hey, you know what? Yeah, Dallas lost. I want to talk about you. I do want to talk about getting Crestridge Cougars some money so they can win the T-Mobile contest and get millions of dollars for upgrades to their field where they literally have a gravel road pit for their track. Come on. Think about how many kids get better scholarships if they could run better on a track. They can't right now because they're running on rocks. They're running on a golf course entrance. For those who need some more clarity, go to Crestridge Cougar on Instagram. Like it.
Are there still Dallas Cowboy fans out there? Or are you just calling out the only one that you know right now?
Oh, no. Okay. There's many. There's many.
Because I'm interested to see.
They're America's team, Bob.
I that's what they tell me.
That's what they know.
I mean, what we said, 4 of the 5 top TV games this year, though, have been the Chiefs. So I'm interested to see, with no Chiefs on yesterday, how the NFL did on a Sunday afternoon, right? How did they do? Because the last time the Chiefs didn't play on a Sunday afternoon, which was last week, had some of their lowest numbers in a long time. So we'll see what they are come later on today. We'll see where the Sunday numbers are. We'll see how good Dallas is. But eventually, people are going to start looking at the Dallas Cowboys, I think, and go, all right, you got to start winning. Like, for whatever reason, they're seemingly the only team in sports that people continue to gravitate to, even though they're not providing anything back in return. Most fan bases would be like, all right, we're done with this team. We're moving on. The Dallas Cowboys seemingly keep people interested, and that's the Jerry Jones marketing. My friend sent me something yesterday complaining about the Cowboys, like, always being on and whatnot, and he used the term suckaroo for the Dallas Cowboys, and I'm like, yeah, that is true. He goes, yeah, but that thing's worth $11 billion. Jerry Jones, he doesn't care about winning. The dirty little secret is there's a good portion of owners in professional sports, and I was talking to somebody about this over the weekend about baseball. They don't care about winning. They go 81-81 and fill the stadium, get 3 million people there. They're happy. Mm-hmm. And Jerry Jones, man, he can talk the talk and whatever, but he knows every time he gets in front of that camera, he's driving the revenue up of that franchise and the value up of that franchise. And at the end of the day, if they win, they win. If they don't, he's still cashing checks.
That's right.
I think he, yeah. I get what you're saying. I still think he's one of the owners that cares about winning, though.
I think he cares too much and gets lost in the transition of.
And that's why he shouldn't be the GM.
Like you think about how he handled things, and we'll get into a situation that I'll ask both of you, because Mac, I was really hoping you were right in your script that Cincinnati would lose for a reason I'll bring up. But I think with Jerry is that the problem with him, because people said earlier on the text line, they're like, well, he paid all those guys that are supposed to be good.
Yeah, he pays the wrong people.
But it's about how he did it. Like he let CeeDee Lamb kind of teeter-totter in emotion of like, does Dallas want me? Like, I know I'm really good, but I don't know why I'm not getting paid. Like, all these other guys that are really good at their position are getting paid. Like, we know why Ja'Marr Chase didn't get paid. He had one more year left. That's the NFL. You're never going to get that unless, well, you're the Chiefs and you're smart and you give Tyreek Hill a little bit of an extension before he gets the big payday. But again, Miami paid Tyreek right away the first time. They're like, oh, you want to get rid of him? We're going to trade him.
They paid Tyreek twice now.
Now
they
paid him twice. Yeah. You look at
His agent?
Drew Rosenhaus.
You see, he linked up with yesterday?
Hassan Reddick.
Yeah.
Who's now probably, like Max said, going to go to Detroit because they unfortunately lost Aiden Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Which that injury, God bless him, man. That thing snapped. God,
that sucks, man.
It snapped and went fish. Yeah, you know what that means?
It looked like Tim Crumride from back in the day, like just kind of dangling there. Like, yeah. You don't want to see that kind of stuff happen to a player like that. Like, I think we can all say the league is better with Aiden Hutchinson playing in the league, right? Regardless of who you root for, you don't want to see a guy like that get hurt, man. That sucks.
Somebody says on the text line, I did notice this as well from the 913. I love how the Cowboys social media team made a post bragging about their stadium and attendance, but yet the scoreboard was blurred out where the scores are.
Oh, was it really?
So they did like a filter and then like you couldn't see it said like 38 to 10. It's like, look at this great
stadium.
Why
are they bragging? Who cares about your attendance if you're not winning games?
Well, they're always going to have attendance. Everybody's going to go there every week.
Everybody in the NFL has attendance.
Yeah.
When was the last time, other than Jacksonville with tarps and stuff, when was the last time you saw a stadium that wasn't almost completely sold out all the time, right?
The NFL.
This is not the 80s NFL where people are sitting in the upper deck and nobody's there.
Like, people came out to watch Drake May in Foxborough.
Yes.
Did you see the crowd there? I was stunned. It was packed, right?
Yeah, there's still a chance. It's not week 8 yet.
Right. No, people are going to go. People love the NFL. So like bragging about your crowd size, that's crowd size in the NFL. That's pretty weak.
I thought he said crotch size. I thought you were really getting into Jerry Jones
here. Crotch on this guy. Yeah.
And it's 8 inches long.
I mean, my goodness, with Jerry Jones coming out the sack,
the wet paper sack.
I mean, jeez. But crowd size braggers in the NFL. Come on now. Everybody's selling out.
It's like now it's in sports and politics. I think that the interesting thing, and I'll wrap this up with Dallas, because I could talk 4 hours on Dallas getting absolutely obliterated. But I think the thing is like everyone knows what the problem is. They just it's similar, because we were talking about the Vince McMahon documentary in the break, like it's or during the show. It's similar to that. Like the World Wrestling Federation, which I know nobody cares about, or entertainment WWE now.
What do you think the NFL is, though? It's entertainment, just like the WWE.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's a Vince McMahon, Jerry Jones comparison. Now, they're different human beings for different reasons, but they have the same mindset. Like, I am so egotistically rich and powerful that I built this, that whatever I do what I want. And I think in Dallas, there were people that were like, God, if Jerry could just, like, stick his head away from it. And look at a guy. Let's be real here. Look at a guy that used to kind of do that. Andy Reid in Philadelphia was the general manager. The offensive coordinator and the head coach. And he realized, because he's a humble, humble man, was like, you know what? Maybe I was doing too much. Now, can we all agree that Brett probably still comes to his office and says, hey, Andy, what do you think about this? And Andy's like, oh, man, I trust if you like it, then go with it.
Well, I mean, Andy has final say. Like, Brett will bring him two or three guys and say, Andy's not sitting there breaking down the game film like Binkley is from Central Michigan on a Tuesday night, right? Brett will bring him the players and say, hey, Andy, we got these three guys that we want to go with, right? We got these three guys that we want to draft.
Yeah.
Which one do you like? You get the final say.
Right.
And all that. And that's the way it should be. There's not been a coach in NFL history that has been a GM coach and had success. It's just too much.
Belichick.
Bill Parcells never did it. I don't know if you always had somebody else there, whether it was a Scott Pioli or that guy that was down in Houston, you know, for a while. Nick Cassero, I think his name is, was with the Patriots for
Chris
a while.
Nicero?
Yeah, exactly. He was the GM. Belichick always had like a guy that he could bounce it off of up there in New England. The guys who are like the Mike Holmgrens, the Bill Parcellses, the head coach, like you can't do everything. And that's why Andy Reid, the best move he ever made was coming to Kansas City and going, Give me John Dorsey. You handle everything. And then once John was done, we brought in Brett. I'm not doing it. It's just too impossible.
That's the most important part, is that those guys are coming to Andy. Andy doesn't go to them.
Yeah.
Like, he could, but Jerry, he does whatever he wants, comes in any door and says, hey, this is what we're doing. You're like, oh, hi, we're having an offensive coordinator's meeting. I don't care. Do this. And it's like, well, we have to, because he's the boss.
But that's
like,
terrible to do something that way. Like, you need a general manager in football. Like, if whoever doesn't think you need a GM, just look at what's going on in Dallas right now. Now, the GM may have been fired 10 times, but it's good to have somebody there that you can bounce ideas off of. You know, who's Jerry Jones bouncing things off of? His son?
Probably.
They have this scout that they've kept there, and they overpay. He's the highest paid scout in the NFL. I can't remember his name.
His name is Scout.
Every time they try and hire him as a GM in NFL, and Jerry's like, we'll just pay you more. Just stay here.
I've never heard of that guy. What's his name?
I'll look him up.
Not, what's his name's dad?
I don't know.
That played for K-State, the running back.
Oh, no. It's not Deuce Vaughn's dad.
Deuce Vaughn's dad? Okay.
I don't think so.
But we know what Deuce Vaughn has. It's kind of like similar to, as we bring in this next guy, it's like when Ned talked about it with his bullpen coaches,
how much more
successful they were the next year when he just said, you know what? I got these guys for
let
a reason.
I'm going to let them coach.
Exactly. So we bring in Josh Vern, our Royals insider, for one final time. Vern, how are you on this Monday morning? Good, sir.
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Good. Absolutely.
Brought to you by Budweiser. This Bud's for you, baseball fans. And as we put a bow on this season, Vern, I mean, I guess you could say overall, great successful season for the Royals. Terrible ending, obviously. But overall, I feel like we're on the right track. And that's a great feeling going into the offseason, right?
Yeah, and even with all the questions that some diehards might have as they dive into the 26 and 40-man rosters, the reason why you should, in my opinion, have real hope and honestly faith in the organization is the individuals at the very top, from an aggressive owner to a savvy general manager surrounded by other terrific scouts and other executives in that Royals front office. You look at how they've revamped a bullpen twice in 12 months, how they've completely changed the rotation in 18 months. And after the evaluation season, they did what so many teams say they're going to do and then ultimately do not. The Royals abided by the results, 106 losses, and they gutted it for the most part. And those individuals that survived the evaluation season, I think, will survive again another offseason. Guys like Michael and MJ, Michael Massey, Freddie Fermin, those individuals on this team that stood out in that 106 loss season of a year ago, to me, are still key cogs moving ahead to 2025.
So when you look at, you know, this roster moving into next season, I feel like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, I feel like they're like a bat away, like an Anthony Santander type of bat away from really solidifying this lineup and really being that team that everybody's talking about going into next season. Where do you stand going into kind of next year of what they need to take that next step?
Yeah, the Santander, a switch hitting power hitter, yeah, that would be ideal. The Kendrys Morales would be perfectly fine as well. Santander might be a touch expensive. Honestly, I think the avenue for this front office just may be another trade this offseason to acquire that bat, unless they want to go middle market bats, you know, the Hunter Renfro type, and, you know, hopefully whoever they bring in is able to stay healthy over the course of 162 and doesn't have that difficult start to the season that Hunter Renfro did, but he picked it up down the stretch. Listen, when it comes to the track record of J.J. Piccolo and the rest of that front office, man, I for as green as they are in this role, and I know they were all there with Dayton Moore, but from being the top dog or Scott Sharpie in the number two, it's still somewhat new. But from Lugo to Frazier to Waka and Renfro, when they dip their toe in that free agent water, not the big bats, the Bregmans and the Santanders, but when they look at the 1-2 year contracts, the track record speaks for itself. Now, if they want to go the trade route and try and bring in someone with years of control, a la Lucas Erceg and Hunter Harvey, someone that you give up, something that you maybe don't prize in the minor leagues, but someone that another organization believes, you know, Caden Wallace, the guy that you traded for Hunter Harvey with the Washington Nationals. If you can find a trade partner and you can bring in a third base bat, second base, corner outfield, and you know, someone that you can have for 3, 4, 5 seasons like you do with a Lucas Erceg. Again, man, I'll push my chips all in with this front office with what they've done so far. And here's where it's so very difficult. Great job, JJ. You know, a well-maneuvered season with all the different things that were thrown at you over the course of the 6 months. Great job. Now you got to do it again. I mean, in a market like this, there's just not a second, in this sport at least, there's not a second where you can put your feet up and go, hey, that was a job well done. We're going to talk with JJ coming up later on this morning. There's just no time to enjoy it with what you need to do, which is consistently churn your talent and always be looking towards the future.
All right, so let me ask you this, though, Vern. How much easier is JJ's job than, let's say, David or the Dayton Moore or Allard Baird, having an owner that's willing to go out and help you do your job to the best of your ability?
Yeah, I don't even think you can compare it to what Dayton and previous general managers were dealing with under Mr. Glass. Now, when the winners presented themselves in 2015 after a trip to the World Series, the Glass family was top half of Major League Baseball as far as payroll. But as you saw this past offseason, John Sherman was able to or willing to write those checks for more than $100 million coming off a 106-loss season.
Right.
So I think the competitiveness inside of Sherman burns a little hotter than it did for David Glass. To me, he's in the fight. And if you know, for the season ticket holders out there, I'm sure if you are a season ticket holder, you've had an interaction with John Sherman. It's almost every single day he's out there on the concourse talking with Royals fans after games, before games. I know he's a billionaire and I know all that stuff, but as far as an owner is concerned, he's as in the fight as they come in Major League Baseball.
Vern, I want to take a question you asked some radio hosts that work in this building, and I want to ask you this question for the offseason. Who gets the extension first, Cole Reagans or Matt Quatrero?
Q. Yeah. Okay. No, Q at least gets that option for 2026 picked up. I would think that would happen quickly. As far as Cole Reagans, you know, nobody likes to hear this, but in a market like Kansas City, I don't think it's prudent to sign any pitcher to a long-term extension. You can let Cole Reagans leave in free agency, but that's still, 4 years away?
Yeah, long time.
Yeah, stay healthy, and, you know, if it's something worth considering in 2027, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But elbows are too fickle. Pitchers go up and down, and in a market like this, you sign Bobby, right? Salvi's making a pretty penny this season. I don't see anybody else that warrants a long-term extension. And honestly, I would never sign a pitcher to a long-term extension. They don't do that in Milwaukee. You don't really see them do that in Cleveland. They obviously never do that in Tampa.
Right.
It's in my opinion, it's a fool's errand.
Will we be entering Vern next season, kind of like this season with Travis Kelce, with Salvi thinking it could be his last?
With him thinking it?
No, us thinking it as fans and thinking this may be the last go-around for Salvador Perez.
In Kansas City, possibly, although they do have that team option for 2026, a very friendly team option, almost, you know, if Salvi puts together another season like he did this year, it's a low ball team option for 2026, so I wouldn't be surprised to see them maybe rework that and stretch that money out over multiple years. If I was a betting man, I would say Salvi's in a Royals uniform, certainly this upcoming season. I would believe in 2026, probably 2027.
Oh, wow.
But then again, Salvi's a guy that says he wants to play until he's 45. Mm. That's not going to happen in a Royals uniform. 2027 might be stretching it, again, because of how this organization needs to run. You can't run the team with your heart, with your feelings,
right,
if you're going to stay consistently competitive in a market like this, right? Blake Snell gone, Evan Longoria gone from Tampa, Frankie Lindor gone from Cleveland, Milwaukee has let, you know, Cy Young Award nominees, Cy Young Award winner go year in and year out. That's likely how this Royals team will go. Now, they've done what Cleveland didn't do, Milwaukee didn't do, and what Tampa didn't do. They broke their superstar 24-year-old off with a $300 million deal. So I know John Sherman, if he's listening, would say, hey, we're not copying what Cleveland and Tampa are doing. We're taking what they do well and trying to improve on it because we pay our superstars in Kansas City. They did that with Bobby, and there's nobody else even close to Bobby Witt Jr. that would warrant that kind of money.
What about trading Brady Singer? I'm big on trading him this offseason.
Yeah, that could be the avenue to bring in your bat, no doubt. When you look at the rotation options next season, man, you stack it up with the rest of the American League Central. I'll put Cole Reagans and Seth Lugo right up there with a Tarek Skubal and a Reese Olson with a return of a Shane Bieber and Tanner Bibee. So you're already feeling good about the top two dogs in your rotation, and even if you trade a Brady Singer, Kyle Wright's returning, Chris Bubich is going to be in the mix, Alec Marsh, Daniel Lynch, and then, of course, that middle market free agent that JJ and this organization thrived swimming in those waters this past offseason. If you can bring in another, you know, Michael Wacha type of arm on a one-year deal with a player option for year two, shoot, even if it's a Michael Wacha, you want to see if he'll take that same deal, another one-year, $16 million with a player option for a second year. I'd bring Michael Wacha back, although after the season that he had, I think he could secure himself at least three guaranteed years, and I don't think that'll come from Kansas City.
Vern, I want to spend this last part thanking you for everybody here, myself included, for the wonderful work you did this season. I can't wait to get you back for when winter meetings happen and we get to talk about what might be, what could be, or what possibly will be for this Kansas City Royals offseason. Enjoy the time. Enjoy taking a little load off, which is a great song by the band.
And, take a little load off,
that's
baby.
Right. And thank you for all that you do and for everything that you've done this season. It was a fun ride, and cheers to you, my friend.
Well, thank you very much, and like it was, I would imagine, apparent in this conversation, thanks to John Sherman and J.J. Piccolo for putting a winner on the field.
Right?
It made my job a lot easier.
All right, let's play one final baseball card game to see where you are going in the offseason. Are you right?
We were done with these.
I am ready.
All right, here we go, baby. We've got a 1990 or 89 Topps Bill Pacoda.
Mm. In 89?
Yeah.
Was he here? Was
yes,
he
was.
City?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. How about a Fleer of, I don't know what year this is, 89, Gerald Perry.
Gerald Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Yankees?
No, Braves.
No. Braves.
Yeah.
Gerald Perry. Cannot picture him. I'm thinking Gerald Williams.
You are, yeah. That's I'll send you a picture of him.
Gerald
and then we
Fleur.
Have an 89 Dunruss, Jeff Blauser.
Jeff Blauser, him and Mark Lemke were quite the double play combination for the championship Braves team.
You got it, man. How about that? I think somewhere Jeff Blauser is still playing, isn't he?
I love that Braves team.
Yeah, that was one of the best.
Pendleton at third, ultimately taken over by Chipper Jones with Fred McGriff over there at first. Man, that was a squad.
But they only won that one championship.
That's true. Right. That's true. Well,
it is what it is.
Oh, well. Yeah. Got a bunch of Hall of Famers on that team.
That's right. No doubt. Well, you go ahead and you sleep this winter, okay?
We'll see.
Yeah, maybe not.
We'll see. We got a lot to – we got games coming up today.
That's right.
No time for sleeping today.
Who do you like going to the series?
I'm rooting for Cleveland and the Dodgers. I don't like rooting for the Dodgers. I like rooting for Shohei and Mookie Betts, but I just don't want to see a six seed make it to the World Series. I'd be fine with the Yankees-Dodgers. I think that would be highly entertaining, but Jose Ramirez, I find it easy to root for him and Stephen Kwan, so I'm pulling for Cleveland and the Dodgers.
I'm rooting for everyone to lose. Vern, I root for you to win, and for one last time, I love you, buddy.
All right, love you too, man.
Thanks, Vern.
That was Josh Ferner, our Royals insider here on 96.5 The Fan, and brought to you by Budweiser. This Bud's for you, baseball fans. Coming up, we had a lot of Buds this weekend, especially Saturday. Boy, was Saturday electric, and I'll give you one this week, K-State fans. 96.5 The Fan, your home for K-State athletics.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5 The Fan.
Hate it or love it, we're back here on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan. The Wait is the name of that song. Thanks, Coach. Sorry. Here's a trivia question. Did you think that the band was the originator of Atlantic City? The song.
The band?
Yeah. Do you think they were the original people that wrote that song.
I've never heard of that song before, except by Bruce Springsteen.
Who is the original writer of that song?
I never didn't know there was anybody else that...
You've never heard the band's version of Atlantic City? Mm-mm. Oh, my God.
Nope.
The band.
Okay.
I believe they were the backup musicians for one Neil Young, I believe, or it's Bob Dylan. It's one of the two. I'm losing my credibility.
Is that as bad as us saying this?
Shout out to the crew here in Denver. They're playing Let It Be throughout the stadium. Nicely done.
I wasn't familiar with that.
Come on. Rule on the field stand.
Oh, it's a touchdown.
Denver has told so far 2.5 from New York.
All right. Trey Blake, influenced by the Beatles. Jason, how do you not know the Beatles?
I know who they are, but when their work comes on, it's not familiar to my ear. I'll say that.
Unbelievable. All right.
How does Jason McCourty not know the Beatles?
Different cultures.
I mean, that's the Beatles, though. I mean, that's like one of those things that no matter where you were raised, when you were born, who you are, you should know the Beatles, right? Like that's one of those overarching things I think every generation should probably know, right?
I like when he said, when their work comes on.
Yeah.
When their work comes on, I'm not familiar with it.
Let it be?
Let it be?
Hey, Jude?
Ranked as one of the most popular songs of all time.
Their work.
Like, isn't that something like, I guess I'm not a huge Beatles fan, but I understand their role and what they did, and I can appreciate them. Like, even if you don't appreciate their music, you can still understand the impact that they had. Isn't that something everybody should know and everybody should be paying attention to? Like,
I don't know. He's younger.
That's what I said. It doesn't matter.
Probably grew up in a different culture.
He's probably...
Like, there's probably... So, like, I bet Mac would know a lot of the work by the Temptations.
Do you know who the Temptations are?
Yeah. He knew who the Beatles were, but, like, a Temptations song come on, and so I'd be like, you didn't know that was the Temptations?
Yeah, but this is the Beatles we're talking about. Like, it's arguably the greatest and most impactful band of all time. And that's coming from somebody that's not a Beatles fan. McCourty's what, 37?
37.
Yeah, you got to know who the Beatles are. You got to know Let It Be.
I don't know. I didn't know the Beatles were the band that sang "Hey, Hey, Hey, Kansas City."
I just
figured that out because of Instagram. I typed in Kansas City because I liked the song "Kansas City, Here I Come."
But that's not one of their big popular hits.
But I didn't know what the "Hey, Hey, Hey" meant. I just thought people said that.
Oh yeah.
And then I found out that was. And I also didn't know the Beatles sang the song "Shake It Up, Baby." Now,
yeah,
Twist and Shout. I did not know that. I thought it was Matthew Broderick. Nope. I'm dead serious. Nope. I thought he sang that song.
You honestly thought he sang that song?
Yeah. I didn't know it was the Beatles. It didn't sound like the Beatles. I also don't like the Beatles.
I don't either, but I do know what they accomplished. I do know their songs. I mean, I think it's like if you're a music fan, you say, yeah, I don't like the Beatles, fine. But if you don't know certain songs, I just think there are certain things you got to know as a human being.
I take
right?
that back. I like the Beatles when they were strung out.
When they were
Yellow Submarine,
that kind of stuff.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Give me that, Beatles. My dad and Brock from the old Number Fives told me both that it's Bob Dylan's backup band. Is who the band is.
Okay, yeah. I had no idea about that one.
Yeah,
but the Beatles, I mean, again, I'm not a Beatles fan at all, but I think that's something everybody should know. Just like everybody should know, Johnny Carson, everybody should know who the Beatles are and at least know if you knew Let It Be and that may be it, fine.
Yep.
But that's arguably the greatest song ever written according to all the charts, right? I mean, I'm not speaking out of turn on that.
No, I don't think so at all.
Which is interesting because we bring up that, which we'll bring up a little bit here in a second, but the football weekend that was college sports, congratulations, K-State Wildcat fans. Congratulations on your win. Also, congratulations, Dusty. You said Colorado would cover the 4. They did. And they look like a better team.
They do.
They're going to be a bowl team.
Yep,
they're going to go to a bowl. They're 4-2.
Their best player gets hurt.
For now.
I know.
That sucks. That sucks.
Yeah.
But Deion's doing what he needed to do at Colorado. Did you see the sidelines on Saturday?
The celebrities?
Carmelo, Durant, Westbrook, all the guys who can't win a big one by themselves are joining Deion's team.
And now he's clean shaven.
I mean, those guys aren't there if Colorado doesn't have Deion Sanders. He's raising the Q rating, not only for Colorado, but those kids as well are benefiting by having Deion there and seeing all these guys on the sideline. That's a cool moment for them.
K-State beat Colorado. They also beat Ohio State.
Yeah, K-State did?
Yeah.
When?
when their quarterback forgot that time is a pretty serious thing at the end of games.
Yeah, you can.
Oh,
yeah,
Will Howard.
I mean, come on, Will Howard. What are you doing? What are you doing?
If he slides a second earlier, they win that game.
They do. But
I mean,
my God.
And you talk about how we set up college football and how college football paid off. The most entertaining thing this weekend was college football because
no doubt
you started with the 11 o'clock slate. That Texas-Oklahoma game wasn't that great.
The 11 o'clock games were not great. I texted Binkley that we're filing a class action lawsuit against him because he sold us on all these good games.
He did sell us.
Yeah. And then like the 2:30 game didn't hit all that much. But man, the 6 o'clock games hit.
And the night started to come in and all of a sudden if you had YouTube TV. Man, I had Florida-Tennessee.
Yeah, I was watching
Oregon,
that one.
Ohio
Tennessee
State.
Didn't want it back. They finally got it in overtime against the back of Florida
team. And then field goal kickers in college.
You can't rely on them.
Now you know why that thing in the video game is going 100 miles an hour side to side. That's why.
Why are people still relying on college kickers?
It's the worst thing
in sports.
Tale is time. And then you go from all of that to Colorado K-State to cap it off at the end of the night. That didn't start until like 9:45 on coverage because that Tennessee-Florida game took so long.
We missed almost the whole first quarter, but
indeed.
I wasn't turning off for that Tennessee game.
Not the way that thing was going.
Like,
and that was...
The best part about the K-State game, though, was Avery Johnson doing the Deion dance in the end zone.
He did do that. Yeah.
I thought that was brilliant,
well
man. Like, congratulations, Avery Johnson.
Yep.
Brilliant move by you, bro. Like that. I'm surprised nobody's done that before.
Yeah,
I was too.
That was great. I'm like, that's a baller move right there. Like Avery Johnson, way to go, kid. And then Ohio State devastated over the loss. My alma mater, I mean, my team that I root for, suffering a big loss in a Big Ten showdown, which, by the way, Oregon just fits. Like the new Big Ten is beautiful. The new Big Ten, like watching Washington on Saturday and UCLA and USC, like it just works, right? Those four schools seem like a great fit into the Big Ten. And Oregon's uniforms are on fire. But man, the Ohio State loss is devastating. But with a 12-team playoff, it's not as devastating as it used to be. That's the beauty of the 12-team playoff right now. These teams get to stay alive and not have to worry about their season being over now. And Ohio State and Oregon may meet up again. Who knows?
Never know. Coming up on the other side, it's our Chiefs contributor that joins the show next, Josh Briscoe, as we dive into this next week's game against the San Francisco 49ers. I'm Dusty Likens. That's Bob Fesco. Mac Morey with you as well on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan.